Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
So now that we're talking about all of these issues, there is one thing that I want to talk about with you today that's kind of been really hot in media. Have you heard about Proposition 129 with the VPAs in Colorado that just passed?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so
I don't live in Colorado.
Yeah, but this will affect us at some point. It's the mid-level practitioner role. It passed. So it allows them to do surgeries with four semesters of schooling, three being online, one clinical. It's so a master's degree equivalency.
So that's the vet school concept they're opening up in Indiana. They want to do a lot of online stuff. Okay. So what surgeries can they do?
Spay, neuter, splenectomy. The problem is it's super vague right now. So everyone's saying everything, and I don't want to speak ignorantly, but I know for certain, let's just say spay and neuter is going to be acceptable, because that's the whole point of this is getting this care to alleviate, get this, to alleviate the burden on the veterinary professionals and on the rural communities in Colorado. So try to play devil's advocate, but I want to know your thoughts. They will be backed. They have to be within the vicinity of a veterinarian. Again, no stipulations, whether it's 6 miles, 6 feet, 6 inches,
it's
by
just,
phone.
Just on the phone.
I don't know. It doesn't outline
the strictest
it.
Rules are in California. It's on the phone.
That's insane.
Because they did pass some good rules here in California, which is like the RVT can start CPR as long as you're on the phone.
Right.
I mean, what, they're going to wait 10 minutes for me to get there?
Sure.
We're done. So that law in Colorado. Wow. It's hard. You know, they're trying to create the super tech here in California. They have for years.
Yeah.
You ask any veterinarian that's been out of practice for out in practice for 15, 20 years, you want to do the spay, you want to neuter?
Do it.
Go for it.
I agree.
Especially that 140-pound lab that's 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, a cat neuter? Oh, come on. Anyone can do it, right? Exactly. There are some practices.
But no, wait. I want to say it falls back on your license as the veterinarian, not on them.
Then that's not fair.
That's what I'm talking about, though. So, yes, there may be some sort of accreditation that they get and a license that they get.
Okay.
But so, it solely goes back to the vet.
Then my question to you is, what veterinarian is going to sign up for that?
That's what I'm saying.
So they can pass
the rural vets will.
They can pass whatever law they want to. Sure. And that rural vet will, too, until that animal dies.
But the thing is that the corporations are going to be able to benefit from this because they're going to hire these VPAs. They're going to get rid of more doctors, and they're going to pay them way less. The people that are involved in it, I was seeing that they were expecting the—
Who's backing the bill?
ASPCA, I believe.
Well, that makes sense for spay-neuter.
But the thing is that the program is going to cost roughly $50,000, $60,000, or $70,000, and they're expecting them to make $100,000 as VPAs, right? What's that going to do to the technicians that work there, that have been working there, that have been in the field, that are extremely underpaid, undervalued, and underutilized? they're going to be forced into going into a VP of position, which may be a good thing because they will have really good experience. But then what's going to happen to the vets that are at those corporate hospitals or things like that? The corporations are going to be able to improve their ROIs and their transaction rates by hiring cheaper people to do those routine, quote unquote, routine surgeries, which I'm never going to say a surgery is routine because things can go wrong.
No. If you ever fucking call a spay or neuter routine.
I'm just saying what people have said
to me. There is nothing routine about a spay. You're removing one of the largest abdominal organs, mm-hmm. especially if the dog is three mm-hmm. or 4 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And it's 20 pounds overweight.
Right.
Good luck. I mean, mm-hmm. my father-in-law started practicing in 1968. Mm-hmm. He was telling me the story last night. His first spay, it took him 25 minutes just to find the uterus.
Wow.
You'd be freaking the fuck out if you're a new grad. But let's get back to this thing. The corporations can do whatever the hell they want to.
Sure.
It's just going to start pushing doctors back into private practice away from the corporates. Corporates are going to start, be charging, $800, $900, $1,000 for this MPA or whatever they're mm-hmm. called. To do a spay or neuter, that's their prerogative. But that's all they're going to be able to do. I'm telling you right now, in my opinion, the money is in the bigger surgeries, not spays and neuters.
Sure, yeah.
The money is in internal medicine cases. Mm-hmm. First thing I did was learn how to do endoscopy. That was amazing.
I love that.
I know. Second thing I did was learn ultrasound. Third thing I learned was how to treat lymphoma. Because if you're going to treat any cancer, lymphoma is the way to go because mm-hmm. you have just prednisone by itself mm-hmm. to the full gamut, and they do freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. I swear to God, I would have been with you mm-hmm. when I first graduated. Like, why the fuck did I just spend $350,000?
Yeah.
Hey, guess what? Those MPAs are probably going to run spay-neuter clinics.
True.
But again, you need to get a doctor to do it. Now, these corporates get around because they have their corporate medical director, mm-hmm. who technically, by California law, needs to be in the clinic once a month.
Hmm. That's interesting.
We never saw the corporate medical director in my place. Mm-hmm. I was basically asked to leave. They still wanted me to be on the license. I said, no way. Mm. I'm done. They still wanted to use my DEA license. Mm. And when I walked out of there that day, I took all the control drugs with me because they're all under my DEA license. Yeah. And they were livid, but they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And then finally, the corporate medical director called me. He's like, I can't believe you're going to let all these animals go through all this pain and suffering. I'm like, do you realize what this corporate just put me through? You think I trust them? Mm-hmm. You're having relief veterinarians come in all the time. Do I trust them with my DEA license? So again, you're going to have to think, do I trust this person?
Sure.
Now, if it's someone you've known for 25, 26 years, there's nothing wrong with giving them a bump to 100,000. Hey, do the spays mm-hmm. and neuters. But I tell you what, man, are you going to charge more when the veterinarian needs to jump in to rescue that spay? Mm-hmm. Are you going to charge more? I mean, how are they going to charge? How would you charge for that? Let's say something went horribly wrong and you got it. The veterinarian now has to stop seeing appointments, has to stop doing what they're doing to go rescue that situation. How do you charge for that? Because they're going to be losing money. Mm-hmm. Everything with corporate it needs to be an Excel spreadsheet. P&Ls, mm-hmm. ROI. My favorite, and if you ever hear this as an early career veterinarian, you get the hell out of there. Average client transaction.
The good old ACT, huh?
If you ever hear those words, you run. Because all they're caring is that you're bringing in enough money per patient you see. Mm-hmm. And finally, I nailed my regional manager because she's like, oh, this person's ACT is not doing well. I'm like, how's my ACT doing? Because I can tell you, I let a splenectomy go home for $5,500. That was under my name. And then someone came in and bought 3 months worth of NexGard. Mm. That was also under my name.
Mm.
You average $5,600 with $73. My ACT just dropped. It crashed. Yeah. So the ACT is a bullshit thing. And any veterinary economist want to argue with me on that one, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's bullshit. Because even though I understand what they're getting after, they're like, yeah, that NexGard should technically go under hospital, but you can't. Because a veterinarian needs to sell that product.
Right.
So you need to put it under a veterinarian's name. Okay, so let's make a code for Dr. G Pharmacy. Mm-hmm. So now you're telling the receptionist to go another step instead of choosing Dr. G Pharmacy. But all of a sudden it's going to say Dr. G Pharmacy on the label, mm-hmm. and that's not a legal label. So that it's a bullshit thing, but people still use it. Mm-hmm. The fact that you know it scares the shit out of me. Mm. I'm sure Peter Weinstein probably brought it up in his class, but that's not what you want to see. That's not what you want to see.
No.
I do not expect a new veterinarian to bring me any money in the first 3 years.
Well, that's a long time. 3 years?
3 years. Now, did that happen to me? No, I worked my ass off.
Yeah.
But on average, I say 3 years until I know they're comfortable on their own, they can work a day by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to build up their clientele.
Mm.
Clients are trusting them. I mean, don't be offended if you hear a client calling your mentor or your advisor or whoever's at your practice mm-hmm. asking about something that you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know you're green.
Right.
They know you're young. That doesn't mean they don't trust you,
mm-hmm.
but they probably don't feel comfortable with what you recommended. And hopefully your mentor will be like, I would have done the same thing. Then you're golden. But if that quote unquote mentor says, oh, I don't know what they were doing. They weren't thinking that. No, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens. Run. Say, thank you. Here's my 2 weeks. Find a new place. But I mean, I can understand getting back to your Colorado thing, what they're trying to do.
Sure.
Is trying to help with the fact that there's probably, 1,000 open veterinary jobs in Colorado?
Yeah.
But you're also talking about the first state in the union to legalize marijuana, mushrooms. What else? I mean, they're not as bad as Oregon that legalized all drugs.
Rock climbing barefoot.
Yeah, exactly. No, Colorado's, it's an interesting state. They have a lot of progressive policies. They have a lot of conservative policies. So, again, you have to get veterinarians to sign up for it. And even if a corporate jumps on it, they still need a veterinarian to sign off on it.
Sure. But they'll find someone. I can promise you.
Well, yeah.
They will.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Everyone has a price.
Right. They're like, hey, we're going to give you an extra $100,000.
They're gonna pull the money and they're going to put. And again, this is like super long shot. Like, I'm in agreeance with you. I just have to hear it from you. Like, do you see that? I know it's going to be like a tiny model and probably a really good research paper, like a study for somebody to really look at and track. Do you think there's a possibility of a mid-level practitioner role actually being successful worldwide or just US?
Did you ever think, you're younger. Did we think that PAs would be that successful in medical human medicine? You barely see the MD when you go in now.
Yeah, but they have better infrastructure than veterinary medicine has. They have the support. They have the financial institutions backing them. They also have their own license.
But I'm going back to the PA. You're like, sure. Oh, I don't want to see a PA.
Sure.
Let me see the doc.
Right.
Give me the doc.
Mm-hmm.
But do I see it flying? If we don't change veterinary medicine, yes.
Like it has to, right?
7,800 open jobs right now. 4,000 veterinarians graduating worldwide. Of those 4,000, 38% of them are gone in 10 years.
It's awful.
Right? So, yeah. Will it fly? Yeah. Because right now we're at the point where we need it. Do I think it's a good idea? No. If their own license was on the line, maybe. Like, they need to have accountability.
Yeah.
If they think, oh, yeah, I'm going to go do this, dog spay, no problem. It's it's routine. And they get screwed. They're the ones that should be held accountable.
Yeah. And they may already have that in the works. You know, I don't know everything about this problem.
I would be interested to hear what Bonnie Lutz has to say about it.
That would be really good to hear, actually. Write that one down. Yeah. So I just, you know, I love the sentiment behind it. You know, I just think it's a Band-Aid fix right now for something like there's so many other things they could focus on. Like the state could drive incentivizing new graduates to actually go practice in Colorado. You know what I mean?
But a lot of kids that go to Colorado State stay in Colorado.
That's not enough.
But Colorado State, okay.
Even if everybody from the school
that graduated, do you know what percentage of Davis and Western grads stay in California?
Probably 95%.
5%.
In California?
Do you think they can afford to live in California?
No. No.
Exactly. And going back to corporate, you're a smart man. So I was a corporate and I came up to you and I go, listen, I got a job for $250,000. One's in Orange County, California. One's in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Same salary.
Yeah.
Where do you go? Come on. Don't let me down.
You want me to say Tennessee?
I do.
You want me to say that?
Cost of living's less. You don't have 14% income tax from the state. You can live like a king. Mm-hmm. You can pay off your student loans. Mm-hmm. You can have a nice house. $250,000 a year in Southern California with student debt that's not tax deductible, which is also another freaking sham. I don't think we should forgive it.
Yeah.
But make the interest tax deductible. Like,
or give me a reasonable interest rate, Jesus Christ.
Right. But the thing is, like, make it tax deductible.
Yeah, I agree.
Then it's okay. But getting back to, it's a different way of life in Tennessee. And I'm talking about Nashville. I'm not talking about the sticks.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Same thing could be said about Texas. Texas is overwhelmed with veterinarians right now because the cost of living.
Yeah, everyone's moving out there, opening their practices.
Because there's no state income tax, very business-friendly state.
Yep. And there's land.
And you could buy, exactly. You could buy that house for $300,000.
How much new construction is going on in Southern California?
There was a lot, and then interest rates went up to 9%, and the money stopped. Same thing. How many corporates are buying practices right now? Money ain't cheap anymore. Yeah. They can't do it.
The COVID really got them. It hooked a lot of people. It hooked a lot of investors.
Oh, well, the COVID, I mean, me and I'm blessed, right? I sold at the peak.
Yeah.
I sold at the peak when they were paying over 20 times EBITDA.
Mm-hmm. That's so crazy.
Now it's
eight. But you kind of got shafted on your PPP loan, right?
I did.
Yeah.
But that's the reason one of the reasons I sold.
Yeah.
But I think that's the problem. Like, we're not getting any veterinarians in California because number one, the two vet schools that are in California, they're gone. And number two, the cost of living is so much in California.
That's atrocious. No, I think about that. I do. My wife has family in Houston and it's very enticing. Like when I go visit.
Go to the Woodlands. Just move out to the Woodlands and their practices are freaking enormous.
They live in
spectacular.
Cyprus.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those practices out there.
They're beautiful.
So in the early 2000s, the booming city.
Yeah.
Las Vegas.
Wow.
Those practices in Vegas, I mean, they were like the freaking casinos, right? Mm-hmm. You had two doctor practices that were 20,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. Top of the line, everything. Again, Nevada. Yeah. Very business friendly. No state income tax. You do. That's why that's why every lawyer you see in California usually have an office based in Nevada and have a Nevada law license because they base everything out of Nevada because it makes sense as a business.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I got my Arizona, I applied and I'm going to hopefully get my take home exam for my Arizona veterinary license.
The state board exam?
So yeah,
you can do relief work there or what? Are you going back to work?
No.
You in a white coat?
No, I never wore a white coat in my life.
It doesn't fit anymore, huh?
Dude, my senior year, they wanted me to wear a white coat in clinics. And I go, I'm Mediterranean. Do you know you want me to sweat all over the table? They're like, okay, no white coat for you. And I'm like, okay. But then again, it was that feedback, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We had that open conversation, right. And I was blunt honest with them.
Paging Dr. Pitstain.
Exactly. Man, it was, yeah. So, but, you know, also another thing, you don't have to wear a white coat when you're a veterinarian. You can wear scrubs. Get your name embroidered on your scrubs. So when they walk in there, it says, Dr. June. Perfect.
Yeah.
They know you're the doctor, not the technician, you know, not my daughter. I've gotten that. Oh, I saw your daughter. The other, oh, no, that was, you know, that wasn't my daughter. That was my new associate. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, yeah, you can also, because a lot of people argue like, oh, I like the professionalism of the white coat, being in the exam room, you know, doing new clients, things like that. If you don't want to wear it, to look smarter, because, you know, that's what the white coat does. It makes me look, ooh, I'm dapper. You could wear your good old scrub cap in there, you know? You could wear a stethoscope around your neck. You could get glasses, put them on your face that don't have prescription if you don't need them. There's all those little things.
Another trick.
I do it for my hair loss.
Another trick. I used to put on a surgical gown.
No.
If I was running late.
Oh, and you'd run in there like.
Oh, sorry. I just got out of surgery. No. It's okay.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
No, there's, like we talked about last time, you got to learn to play the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the stethoscope around the neck is a given. Until you start getting vinyl reactions, you know, or whatever that, it's not latex anymore, whatever they use. And the funny thing, one of my best friends lives across the street, is the vice president of 3M. The fact that I don't know what those are made out of, he's probably going to give me shit. But the stocking cap for sure is good. But if that white coat gives you the confidence, makes you comfortable, wear it. But I'm just saying you don't need to. You don't need to. You don't need to be to that standard. You need to be who you are.
Sure.
Clients like that. Clients like it. When you walk in, like I would wear an outfit like this. All during COVID, I wore shorts because we're all outside.
You did not wear shorts.
I wore shorts to practice every day because I was outside. If it's 110 degrees out there, I am not going to stand it. Yeah, dude.
Man, I'd pay to see that.
Yeah. And then during the winter, I wore shorts because we're in California.
Right.
Shorts and a hoodie. I had a whole bunch of Canyon Animal Hospital hoodies made for the staff to wear, for me to wear. But I mean, I was like, there's no clients coming in. And clients didn't care. And the biggest thing, the clients were like, will you please take off your mask? I can't understand what you're saying.
Right.
The best were when the clients pulled in, they had their windows all the way up. They're sitting in the car with a mask on.
Talking through the glass.
No. And yeah. And then all of a sudden, can you please put down your window? And you'd be lucky if you got half an inch. But, you know, that's another discussion for another time about that. Because, you know, the people who are in charge of COVID never really got veterinarians involved and said, hey, when you get a corona outbreak, what do you guys do? Right? Well, we get corona outbreaks all the time.
Yeah.
We get upper respiratory outbreaks all the time. Why didn't get us involved? And the fact that they didn't want to give patients plasma, they'd rather risk the respirator, was crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
We talked about that last time, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so a whole other conversation we got to have.
Oh, yeah.
I'm interested.
What, panic medicine?
Yeah. It's quite awful what it can do to an industry or just a society.
Or the trust.
Yeah.
How many people trust MDs now or trust the U.S. Surgeon General?
Yeah, that's a tough thing to talk about.
And the fact they're still... anyways, we won't talk about it. I won't get triggered by it. I don't want, no, no politics.
We had a good day so far.
You almost got me going with the whole Colorado thing, but no. We're good.
No, because, yeah, I mean, that's a real thing, though, you know? Like, it's so easy to not talk about things that
work. They've been trying to pass it for 20 years in California. 20 years. And Bonnie Lutz finally is working with them on how to make it somewhat acceptable. But, yeah, I mean... Again, let's say something goes wrong.
Right.
Simple thing. You do a huge dog neuter and there's a scrotal hematoma. Who fixes that? Who does a scrotal ablation? Who's going to do that procedure? And that's another thing I'm going to teach you really quick. I'm going to teach you as well. if it's, even if it, perfect example, like a basset hound, you know, they have the low hanging testes right. and that scrotum.
Right.
Like if they had metal nuts, they would, mm-hmm. we could call right. them Sparky.
Yeah.
Right. So if, don't be afraid to take off that
yeah.
freaking scrotum because it will fill with blood mm-hmm. because the one thing the body hates is dead space.
Sure. It's going to fill it with something.
Take off the scrotum. Charge them an extra 10 minutes of surgery time. Because all you're going to do is take cautery and make a nice elliptical incision.
If they have cautery, you hope they have it.
Well, okay. If they don't.
I don't know a lot of people that do that.
Well, then that's called a blade and yeah. get a syringe of epinephrine yeah. and lidocaine.
Yeah.
So, and then just spray it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also put a pressure bandage on it in a figure eight. Make sure you don't mm-hmm. tuck the penis in there because then they can't pee. But there's ways to get around it.
Sure. I mean, it just goes back to a lot of people do things differently. And those, like you said, take those as little gold nuggets. And if you want to use them, if you don't want to use them. But I think going back to that feedback talk, I really hope people listening take what you said about listening, like actively listening to what they say, even if you don't agree with it, to bite your tongue for that second. And I like that you said, oh, that's an interesting way, because that absolves you from any judgment that you're trying to cast upon them. Like, you can disagree with people. You can work alongside them and practice two different ways. And you guys may have two different set of clients and have a very successful practice. And you have very good patient outcomes.
Just wait till you start going to veterinary meetings. Like, you know, Vegas.
Yeah.
Orlando. The one I love is ACVIM. By far the bomb. Yeah. But heaven forbid you have someone from Davis or someone from Penn because they start their speech with, this is how we do it at Davis.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we do it at Penn. None of the other vet schools do that.
We call them the CrossFitters because they always have to tell you they're doing CrossFit.
And they're vegan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, good old P90X back in the day.
P90X. Oh, wow. Yeah,
you did
Man,
that.
You're going back far.
Yeah. I used to do that looking at the TV.
See, we had the 6-minute abs.
Oh, yeah. 6-minute abs. Oh, that's funny.
It was a videotape that you could order. And if you ordered now, you got free shipping and handling.
You definitely purchased that. To know that much already.
No, it was on the TV.
Right.
No, I wanted the 4-minute abs. I didn't have 6 minutes, dude.
6 minutes. Oh, that's funny.
But I did the 0-minute ab, and I ate and drank a lot in vet school because I enjoyed vet school.
Sure.
I had fun. I socialized.
Yeah.
You know, if you're at a school that has basketball, football, you know, a bar scene, fraternity scene, any of that,
yeah,
go. If you're like, oh, I'm shy, I'm just, oh, no, that's so tight. You got to get yourself into that situation. Mm-hmm. And I challenge you to learn, meet as many people as you can. And I also challenge you to learn as much as you can about every single person you meet.
Mm-hmm.
That prepares you. And it's a fun way to do it because you usually have a cocktail. You usually have, you know, a whole group with you. You usually have a good time doing it.
Yeah.
I remember in vet school, I mean, me and my buddy Scott, who does spay neuter in Arizona.
Nice.
And my other buddy who passed away, love him to death, James Morlock. We used to make sure we did anatomy lab, study for anatomy test with at least a case of beer. And everyone in our vet school cast started catching on because they'd come to dissect their cow or horse and find beer cans in the colon.
You're just trying to see how much it could hold.
Exactly. How many liters is truly in a rumen, right?
Yeah. Who knows?
And my wife too, she was, my wife is brilliant. And she graduated from UCSD. Sorry, ooh, UCSD.
Good catch.
She wanted to go to Davis for vet school because she didn't want to leave California. Ended up in Illinois. But when we started dating first semester, because we met at the interview, and we started dating when she got there. She would get so mad at me because I'd never freaking study. She would read every page, write down all the notes. And she go to me, she's like, why aren't you studying? And I'd be like, I'm taking home the important parts. I know what's important, what I need to know, because I worked at a vet clinic for 5 years. I know exactly what I need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And she caught on to that. And eventually we started going to Chicago more. We went to basketball games. We'd go out and drink on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Friday nights. You know, we started living that college life and getting out more.
Yeah.
And I think that's what another thing that probably set us up for veterinary practice not being that bad. Because again, now where we are, our close group of friends have the same values as us and also enjoy blowing off steam as much as we do.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was a weird tangent to go on, but
yeah. No, it's important though. Did you get married when you were in vet school?
We were out. We were January of our junior year.
No, okay. So you did that.
We did vets. My wife. This is how amazing she is. Mm-hmm. My wife was doing vet school, graduated with like a 3.9, and still planned a wedding here in Newport Beach, 2,000 miles away. She planned a wedding as well, and it was spectacular. But the thing is, like, I was lucky, right? Mm-hmm. I was able to find. Well, we've been together now for almost 30 years. So I hope my soulmate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Raise a family together and practice together. Now it is hard for me because I'm retired and she wants to go over cases with me at night. Yeah. And I'm like,
work never leaves your house.
I got to sit here and listen to this. Okay. But I like want to cut her short because I'm always, she's like, oh, I had this cat come in and it was a male cat limping. I'm like, you do an x-ray and he needs an FHO. Mm-hmm. She's like, listen, listen. So Linda, listen. So but no, again, even the communication with me and her, it's still hard because you've been talking to clients all day about veterinary medicine. When you come home and talk about veterinary medicine, then my father-in-law comes over who's a veterinarian.
God.
Yeah.
You can never get away from vet med.
No. But you know, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now, because I still don't want to get away from vet med. Sure. I still don't want to be in the clinic.
Yeah.
I want to help you guys.
Right.
Be successful. I want to help you guys enjoy it like I did, mm-hmm. like my wife did. Because my wife retires in 6 days.
Wow. Congratulations. That is
That
is awesome. I'm like,
so what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And this is how she is, though. She's like, she's going to go back as a contracted employee, not as a salaried employee. And I'm like, why are you doing that? She's like, I have 2 young veterinarians that I'm trying to mentor, and I can't leave them.
Mm.
That's the type of mentor you need to find.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Someone who's retiring after working for 27 years, plus her dad was a veterinarian, so she used to sleep in the kennels while he was doing emergency surgery. Mm-hmm. That's the type of you need to find. Someone who's like, I'm walking away, but I can't walk away completely because I gave my word that I would help these two.
Yeah.
That's what you need to find. So, it's a hard thing to find. There's no standardized mentoring program. Mm-hmm. But we do what we can do best.
Yeah.
Like there's no book on how to be a good parent, right?
No. I wish there was. No. But I still wouldn't read it.
I mean, they bring you down the elevator.
Yeah.
They wheel you out to your car and they're like, see ya. Mm-hmm. And they leave.
Yep.
You're like, you didn't even check if the car seat was right. I was the dad that went to the fire department to make sure I put the car seat in right. I'm that guy.
Oh, they do it at AAA too.
I know.
If you go to AAA, they'll do it.
Right. And by the third kid, you're like, ah, shit, it's loose. We're okay. Let's go. but no, it that's the same thing. Like, I look at that scenario and I look at a veterinarian graduating. Mm-hmm. The dean gives you the diploma, which isn't even the real diploma. You open it up and says, oh, your diploma is going to be there in the mail. You know, once you pay off all your bills,
sure.
They make sure your GPA is okay.
Your parking fines.
Yeah, exactly. but that's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that could be for us, this is my story. It was Sunday. We graduated on Sunday at Illinois. Mm. 7 p.m. and we got home after dinner, partying, probably 10 o'clock. My brother-in-law and I got up at 4 a.m. the next day and started driving to California. And, you know, we made it so far. I actually got an extra day in there because we made it from Champaign, Illinois to Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. The next day, I'm like, call my wife up. I'm like, and those times we didn't really have the cell phone.
Right.
So I went to the hotel room and I had to dial it. Yeah, exactly. You Morse code?
Yeah.
Exactly. So I told her we're stopping in Vegas, and we got one night to party it up in Vegas, my brother-in-law and I.
That's perfect.
Because we're a day ahead.
Yeah.
But the reason why I say that is because that was out of Monday. I pulled in California like Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I started practice the following Monday. Now, that's the thing. Like, mm-hmm. I got my diploma. I'm free and clear. I can go practice.
Right.
Bullshit. Right? So, but I was like you. I worked emergency while I was going through vet school. I mm-hmm. had great relationships with all my professors. I used to go golfing with my pathology professors and the head of pharmacology. Great freaking stories too. If talk to your professors, they'll tell you some scary ass stories that happened to them. And you're like, holy shit. And funny ones too.
Right.
Dr. Tranquilli, that's the guy. He's the one who did all the research on Domator and Dexdomator.
Oh, no kidding. That's cool.
Head of pharmacology at Illinois. He went golfing with Dr. Zachary, who was the head of pathology at the time, and I, and a couple, Scott and
mm-hmm.
James.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling, a goose flew over. And he goes, oh my God, guys, I got to tell you a story. And we're like, okay, cool, you know? He's like, I went out hunting. And I'm like, oh shit, a Jewish guy, we really don't hunt geese, right? But anyways, he's like, and I shot it.
Uh-huh.
And I knew I hit it because it fell out of the sky. And I just couldn't find it. My dog couldn't find it. We could not find it. And that was on the weekend. He shows up to Illinois on Monday, and the wildlife clinic pages him because they have a goose in there with a gunshot
wound. No.
He had to do anesthesia.
On the goose.
They got shot.
Oh, man. That's got to be some weird karma cashing its check.
That was the type of relationships I had. I mean, so he... One day he goes, hey, because I was on my anesthesia rotation. He's like, hey, Gersh, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
I got a cool case for you. I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. And it was, and we were working with the Lion Rescue out of Indiana that was mm-hmm. on the Lion King.
Lion King guy?
Yeah. But it wasn't that guy. He was
Tiger King?
Tiger King.
We're talking about Disney Channel.
Yeah, Lion King.
Tiger King.
Yeah. No, so they brought it in because the veterinary dentist at Illinois was going to put in a stud, a titanium crown mm-hmm. on a cracked canine. And he's like, you want to do anesthesia on this? I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. So he didn't tell me he already pre-sedated it.
Okay.
Right? He was just, he wanted to do this to fuck with me.
Yeah.
So I went down to try to give it a shot, and mm-hmm. he shook the cage and growled. Like he went, like that.
Spooked you?
I must have shit my pants and jumped 20 feet. I don't care, dude. You see it?
Yeah,
it's a tiger.
I'd do it.
You do it.
I would 100% do that.
Yeah, yeah,
I would be there.
But I mean, those are the fun things. Yeah. Like how the vet students, you got to have those relationships,
mm-hmm.
and also veterinary professors, you got to have those types of relationships.
Yeah,
right.
100%.
So, I mean, but those were great. So
you have to make it fun. Like it's so easy to make vet med not fun. Like. You can really dwell on all the shitty things that happen, but I think if you have a good attitude about it and you laugh and you do make the effort to like you said, reach out to the staff. Like a lot of the foreign professors at my school, I've heard the funniest shit from them, like the funniest stories from the pathologists, from the anatomists, and I've grown to have such a great relationship with them just as people. Take vet med away, and I would have a drink with every single one of them that I'm close with right now.
Absolutely.
And talk about anything.
Absolutely. And chances are, if you ask a professor to, hey, let's go grab a bite to eat or lunch, chances are the professor's going to pay for it. I'm just saying.
That's true.
So, but the funny thing was, you're telling crazy stories.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a conglomerate of dairy veterinarians that came in from Pakistan to Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a cow that was in dystocia. And myself and Chris Shule, who's a pretty boy from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and of course, I'm just the pretty boy.
Right.
They're like, we need to get this cow down. And I'm like, hey, Chris, let's go do the flying W.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you even did that in Food Animal. But it's a way to put a rope around their neck, you cross it across their back, and then you bring it across underneath.
Yeah.
But by the time we did, we had about...
Oh my God, you had like 3 inches of rope.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, let's do it. And the cow just takes off. I let go.
No.
Chris decides to hold on, and he basically is like land water skiing across this dirt lot. You just see this dust cloud. It looked like Pigpen coming in from Charlie Brown. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, Chris, drop it. And all of a sudden he drops it and he looks at me like, what the fuck, dude? Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's a 1,200 pound animal.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
You just walk away. We try again. Get a longer rope. I mean, get me more than, you know, well, yeah, for every man, this is what, 8-12 inches? But the thing is, you know, you laugh at that. But anyways, where I'm going is then out of nowhere, we got the cow down.
Mm-hmm.
This, I'll never forget it. We call them the flying Pakistani.
No.
Comes flying great. Over the fence. That. Rips off his shirt into his wife beater, white t-shirt underneath, no glove or anything, and just goes right up the vagina. And we're all looking at him like, what the fuck is going on here? And, you know, and then all of a sudden, you hear him, you know, scream something out.
Mm-hmm.
Four other Pakistanis come flying.
No way.
But they got the calf out.
That's Wild West medicine. If you keep going west enough, you hit Pakistan.
Exactly. So, I mean, crazy stories out of vet school. I mean, obviously every senior year you do a prank. Mm-hmm. At least we did at Illinois. We call them the senior pranks.
Mm-hmm.
I owned my house in Illinois, and I had a whole bunch of bricks left over. We brought the bricks over, and we literally bricked the front of the pharmacy window.
Oh, so they couldn't see out of it?
So we did that, and then there were a few beers involved, we'll say that. And then the next thing is someone walks in from the miniature pony from the equine ward and leaves it in the small animal lobby.
No way.
We get a whole bunch of hay, bring water.
Yeah.
Supposedly there was a whole bunch of poop and piss that
I'm sure it was everywhere.
But I mean, you got to be able to do that, and the professors laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we filled one veterinary office because you could get over the top.
Mm-hmm.
We filled one up full of balloons.
Mm-hmm.
Another one full of wadded up newspaper.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's
so they open the door and it just pour out.
Yeah.
I mean that it was no ill will. We did it because we had that type of relationship with those professors.
Yeah. And I think you should. I think there's like that separation. There's a lot like the ability to separate yourself is appropriate. I think a lot of people do, you know, I have classmates that have full-time jobs or kids or husbands that don't have the time. Like for me, I wish I did have more time, but my priorities are set in my home life to do those things. So when they're going out, I commute an hour. So like when my friends are going out, my classmates are going out to get beers and stuff, it's harder for me to do that. So, but I try to still make time for those moments where I can say, hey, honey, you know, do you need help today? Like, are you having a good day? I'm going to go do this. Like last night I went to a dinner because they had a lot of recruiters there. They had a lot of people talking about, you know, AI and vet med and stuff like that. And I wanted to be a part of that. So yeah, I sacrificed a little bit of time. But a lot of these students, they don't have husbands or wives. They don't have kids. And they're wanting to get home to scroll on their phones or to lay down and sleep because they're tired. And yeah, there's a time and a place for those moments, but I think you miss out on a lot of great experiences, like the flying Pakistani. You know, you can have that moment and you can laugh and have fun and do dumb things and laugh because it's dumb. You know, everything doesn't have to be serious. And I want to make vet med fun again. And you obviously have made vet med fun, and you still want to encourage that by mentoring, you know, a lot of new veterinary grads or even people that are already in that need help with emotional intelligence. I mean, you're getting your DBA, and that's awesome. I think that's great. I challenge anyone listening that is a veterinary professional, whether you're on your way out or even if you've already retired from the profession, to at least just keep your hand in it and on the pulse, because we need you. Like, we need you more than ever, and I can tell you that most of my class is not going to tell you that. And I really just, if anyone listening has any sort of insight, like, I'm begging you to reach out to new grad vets, you know, even, you know, go speak at vet schools. Like, yeah, it's gonna cost you money to buy them lunch, but like maybe you win over the hearts of like two people that reach out to you and you change their lives and they go on to be amazing doctors and they go on to change the lives of thousands of people around them. And I just think that you can never get out of vet med fully. Like, I really don't think you should, whether that be from home having, you know, calls or even going to vet schools. I think it's very important to leave that legacy. We talked about legacy. You talked about legacy with Dr. Weinstein. You talk about this legacy, and we need more of them. We talk about the cheerleaders. We need it. Like, I'm begging you to be there for us at this point. It's scary. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, the good thing is you got me, so yeah, you're going to be okay. But and you probably have a lot of other doctors that you've worked with as well. Yeah. I mean, excuse my French, but where the fuck are they?
I don't know.
Right?
I'm trying to find them.
Yeah. But, you know, the good news is, like, the ones that have retired or are about to retire, they want to come on here and talk. They want to get their word out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can't reach out to how many retired veterinarians, yeah, right? You sucked down that cocktail. You must have had a hard school day today.
No, I had the day off.
You had the day off and you're still sucking down the cocktail preparing for a school day tomorrow?
I have my big exam tomorrow.
There it is. There it is. That's how you prep for an exam. Yeah. Remember, I did it with beer. He's doing it with
Scotch.
Scotch. There you go. So
it helps the hair grow here.
Right. Well, I wish I had an answer. Yeah. To that part.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I love veterinary medicine so much. Yeah, I'm going back to school to study what the phenomenon of what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, but the problem is a lot of people, I was that way. I graduated vet school. I'm like, thank God. I'm never going to have to take another test. Mm-hmm. Never have to study, read a book. Oh, I just have to learn the profession. Because you always are learning.
Sure.
As a veterinarian.
Is awesome.
Which is, like, unless you perfected it. And if you have, I'd like you to call us.
Yeah,
we'll have you on the show.
We're going to test you. Yeah. I want to hear that shit real quick. If you're a perfectionist.
Yeah, if you perfected it.
Let's go up to bat.
Yeah, let's hear it. But when I did sell, it was in my heart. I can't leave veterinary medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a passion.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't a job.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, if you're not enjoying what you're doing or where you're working, it will become a job. And then all of a sudden, the amount of emotional labor you have to put into your job, your emotions come out fake. Mm-hmm. And clients are going to read that immediately.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Immediately. They're going to be like, oh, he's full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't think your clients can read you, you're wrong. You are wrong. So, it's like you almost want to put out the bat signal, right? And just have them come running. But, man, some of them have been burned so bad.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And I think it's the burnout over the 20, 30-year career that they've had and the transition, the change, like, you know, you tell me all the time that vets don't want to change. They don't want change. Like, of course, that's to a specific demographic of vet. But
it's every vet. It's,
yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, but the spectrum of it is the changes in different
areas.
Veterinary
admissions are barely changing now.
Yeah.
The way people are taught is barely changing, but they're trying different things.
Right.
Barely. But there's still the traditional veterinary medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how useful is it to sit in a veterinary surgical lecture and look at pictures up on a PowerPoint that have no blood?
Mm. Yeah.
It's in the seat.
Perfectly laid
out. Yeah, look at that.
That's why I liked it. Don't get me wrong. There's a time and place. But, like, in the pathology lab, you know, like, that was awesome. But then you go into anatomy lab where everything's, like, curated nicely, and you're like, oh, look
at that. They still do the red and blue?
Some of them, yeah, that they've plastinated, they have, like, the red and blue and that you can see. But a lot of it's, like, open carcass, you know. It's
that's already been dissected out for you.
No. We dissect the whole thing, which is awesome. But, you know, these things have been, all the blood's been drained out of them. So, you know, you could see the deflated vessels and stuff. But I think it's important. I liked it. But I was definitely more excited to go to the pathology lab where we did a necropsy, you know, on whatever. Because at our program, we only take donated animals. You know, I think I talked about that last time, which is wonderful. We don't purchase. It's all through donations. And what we offer—
Let's clarify.
Yeah.
Deceased.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, we don't euthanize. It's called the WAVE program. If you're interested, you can donate to our wonderful pathologists there. And what the program does is they actually pay for the cremation and they send you back the remains when the students are done actually using it. So it's an up to 2 year commitment, can be sooner depending on what we use it for, what we use your pet for. But I think that's awesome. I think it's wonderful. And we always could use donations. So
2 years to get the ashes back?
Depending on what we use it for. So if the, and I don't think it normally is that long. So if we do a live necropsy, it's generally going to be coming back a lot sooner. But when you do sign it, it is up to 2 years because we can reutilize the body. You know, we can do an entire eye lecture where they actually are able to preserve the eye so where it could last a year and a half. So multiple classes of students are able to manipulate it. But once it becomes to a point where I've dissected everything away that I can, then they go ahead and they send it off to cremation and they talk to the owner. So,
wow.
That's the only holdback for some people is I'm not going to get the ashes back in this time frame.
Yeah.
But I think working with them, they may be able to give you a better, tighter timeline.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, the good news is a lot of humane societies out here are running no kill. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, that if there was any blessing about euthanized humane society animals, they were used to teach students. But you know, I that's a great program. Mm-hmm. Pathology lab was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was way cool trying to figure out why, you know, I remember vividly we dissected a sow that had passed away. Mm-hmm. Because she just crashed, but guess what? She was pregnant. So there were a bunch of little foeti in there.
Oh, that's awesome.
But you always hear about the cardiac ulcer that they get from getting old grain feed. Mm-hmm. She had one.
Oh, so you got to see that too when you opened up. That's cool.
Yep.
Man, what was it like chiseling that picture into stone?
You know, it was hard, but we were able to do it. And the best part is that we had used tablet lights, so the rocks weren't as heavy when we carried them into our practice. Mm. You fucking asshole.
I'm not that much younger than you, like 40 years, 50 years, so, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? When you, I still remember when we would have to take an x-ray and hold it up to a hot lamp.
Oh, God.
Or a candle. No, the lava lamp was undergrad for me.
Okay.
That was like, yo, you want to come back? Look at me.
With your lava lamp.
Yeah, I got a lava lamp.
Devil's lettuce.
And I also had, the devil's lettuce. And I also had glow-in-the-dark posters and the black light.
I actually had that. I did have the Spice Girls on CD. I had glow-in-the-dark posters and stars on the sky. You know,
this so Mrs. Beckham, you year. Have your number one fan right here.
Yes.
No, it was no. Life was different. I mean, life is continually changing.
Sure,
veterinary medicine needs to learn to evolve quicker. Is that going to happen? Mm-hmm. I've been asking that for 25 years. I'm pretty sure there was someone just like me asking that 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a perpetual cycle.
Yeah. So,
I have a question for you. So, so you're sitting with someone who hasn't even started his vet career yet. What is your biggest piece of advice and or biggest regret that you didn't focus on when you were in, let's say, just before you to graduate to just after you graduated? And what do you want us as vet students to focus on?
I want you guys, you students, I want you, the students, to not be afraid to ask questions and try to step in and make sure you're truly involved, especially when it comes to your cases senior year. I remember specifically, I took surgery, advanced surgery elective, my very last rotation, because I knew I would be doing emergency surgeries, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going to be doing them. The resident did. He didn't have the board certified surgeon there for emergencies. The residents always did the emergencies at Illinois. And I remember telling him the week before I graduate, okay, you're doing this one. I'm doing the next one. Mm-hmm. You expect me to be able to do this in a week. So let me do it. So you have to have the courage and the fortitude to say, hey, can I try this? Can I try this? You know, come up with and don't have those deep, crucial conversations mm-hmm. with your clinical rotation professors about cases and question them. Why did you do this? Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking I could do it this way. Get the feedback from that. Are there any regrets I have? No. I loved every day. There is no regret I can think of, like, shoot.
Right.
But again, I think it was because I had 5 years of working in a veterinary hospital mm-hmm. with amazing mentors before I went to vet school. So I already knew what to expect.
Yeah.
If you didn't work, if you only worked 100 hours or 200 hours or didn't work at all at a veterinary hospital
yeah.
before you went to vet school, your senior year, you get your butt into veterinary hospitals and you start seeing what they're dealing with. Prepare yourself that way. I always ask people, how are you going to know if someone says, hey, I don't like Brussels sprouts. Why don't you like Brussels sprouts? What's their answer? Oh, I tried them. Mm-hmm. If you're in veterinary school and have minimal to no hours, how are you going to know the profession's for you? How do you know you're going to like what you're going to do? How do you know you're going to like talking to clients? How are you going to know you're going to like doing all this stuff? So you got to get out there. You got to get out there. Mm-hmm. You got to work on your communication skills. I want you to start explaining cases to your parents, to your brothers, to your sisters in a way that they will understand. Not your classmates, not your clinicians. Learn to talk at their level. How would you explain a shunt in a liver to your parents? That will help you talk to clients. Learn how to have eye-to-eye conversation. Not texting, not email. Learn how to look someone in the eye and say, I think this is not going to be a good outcome. You got to learn to do that. Mm-hmm. I would love to do a longitudinal study where I have clients come in, like get 10 veterinarians and have to each client that comes in over like 4 or 5 months, mm-hmm. have them explain it via text and have them explain it verbally and see what the feedback is from the clients.
Yeah.
And especially as time goes on. Because that's the thing. We're used to texting, right? Mm-hmm. You can't talk that short to a client. So you got to learn how to have human interaction. There's what are some always the I live by the model, see one, do one, teach one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always tell people there's only two reasons you don't rectal a dog.
If you don't have a hand, they don't have a butt.
That's right. If you don't have a finger, they don't have a butt. Mm-hmm. You know, another saying I always used to say at work is the solution to pollution is dilution. Mm-hmm. So if they have a bad urinary tract infection, put some sea salt on their food so they drink more water. Mm-hmm. That's basically what SO and CD are. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, they're balanced, but there's higher in salt.
Salty.
Yeah. So they drink more water.
Yeah. Salt licks for horses.
Yeah. There's like different things you can do to try to make your life better. But obviously learn. But as you learn how to explain it at their level.
Right. Barney style.
Right. Dude.
That's when you understand it most.
Know what really works great? Visuals.
Yeah. I actually like that.
Find a
way. I use a lot of visuals right. for the way I teach myself things when I'm looking up stuff.
Right. Well, you can, yeah. If you have that surgery, you know what to do.
Yeah. I'm watching YouTube all day long.
Right.
Even exactly. before the surgery, I'm watching it.
Right.
Or I'm watching it with the doctor.
Right. Or right. Or if there's a new technique.
Yeah.
Right. Or don't. And most importantly, don't be afraid to ask if you need help. Yeah. Do not be afraid to ask if you need help.
Yeah, that's important.
And if they give you feedback or grief because you're asking for too much help, find a new practice. I mean, you got to be happy. If you're not happy, this profession's going to suck. I know I shouldn't put it that way, but that's how it is. You got to enjoy what you're doing every day for 10 hours. The other thing I was going to ask you, what's your opinion as a veterinary student about going into just doing relief work within the first 6 months to a year? Because that's the trend right now.
Solo relief work? Or am I in a hospital?
Well, you got to look on the listing, right? They'll tell you whether or not there are other doctors there.
I think a lot of the relief work is solo, like a lot of solo. And I think it's a bad idea. I understand the thought process behind making $1,500 to $2,000 in a relief shift, and it can be enticing, but I think it's almost a booby trap for some. I think there are very few, and I don't want to talk about the outliers. I want to talk about the general population of veterinarians that I think are coming out of school or are first year graduates. You know, I think it's a dangerous game to play. Because you're just not as equipped as you think you are. I don't believe there is a day one ready vet that can come right out of school and be day one ready by themselves to handle every component of veterinary medicine. I will argue that to the end. I don't think they exist. I think mentorship is a must. I think relief work day one is dangerous. Even for your own personal vision of veterinary medicine, because it can taint it. When something goes wrong and you have no one to blame but yourself and you are emotionally depressed and you don't have the ability to have those mentors to fall back on in the moment of something going wrong, when you're calling frantically, when you have a patient bleeding out and you don't know why, or, you know, DIC is happening, you don't know what to do in an emergent situation and you've never been in that, I think it's very dangerous, but I will say, yes, there are some people, very, very, very few, that would be pretty good at adapting to that. I do not recommend it at all. Like, in the slightest, I don't recommend doing relief work day one. But I know some people who are going to do it.
So I asked you last time, and I'm going to ask you again. How long do you think it's truly going to take the average veterinarian to be comfortable?
Yeah.
To not have that hand-holding, to not have... I don't want to say hand-holding.
Yeah, how do you want to put that? Because, I mean, like...
No, I'm not going to say hand-holding. I'm going to say have that confidence to do a spay while your mentor went to lunch. Like, left the facility to go to lunch.
A spay? I mean, a spay, I'll be generous. I'll say 3 months. I'll say 3 to 6 months. Like, that's generous to me for a spay, right? Because, I mean, I'm expecting, like, for us, we have third year and fourth year. Like, we have a surgery rotation. Like, you have the ability to go out and learn these right now because we're on clinical rotation. And then you have a whole another year where you can plan, where you should be doing a ton of spays and neuters. Like, that, not routine. I won't say it's routine.
Thank you. I thought you were going
there. I'm
not
going to be a jackass.
Dude, I was going to go. Oh, I was going to destroy you.
I was going to say poutine. I'm hungry. No, but, you know, I would say to where they're, and that's being generous just for the spay, I think 3 to 6, you may think longer. But again, I'm only thinking in the vision of how I would feel. I'm trying to understand others. I can tell you right now, more than half my class is like, nervous of surgery, which is respectful. You know, I get it. Like,
why are they nervous?
I think it's because lack of experience I think it's either within school or out of school. I don't think they're getting enough of it. I think it's very daunting.
What do they think they're going to do?
Probably kill the patient.
How?
By not doing the surgery correctly. You know, I think...
Kill the patient.
That's being dramatic.
But you know? I mean, they're worried about doing harm.
Absolutely. That's better worded.
Every day that you're going to be in veterinary practice, every hour, you're going to worry about doing harm.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not worrying about doing harm, guess what? You're in the wrong profession.
Mm-hmm.
Or you shouldn't be in practice. If you don't worry about harm, Dr. Kacharian was in here the other day. He's 78 years old, still doing TPLOs, still mm-hmm. practicing. He still, to this day, talks about cases that didn't go right in surgery.
Mm.
And he's like, it destroys me still to this day. So, you know, you should worry about doing harm, but sure. You shouldn't let it interfere with you practicing.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I do think it does. I think it interferes with them. I think it interferes with them because they're...
Do you think they worry about doing bad on a test and that keeps them from doing well on a test?
Some people, yeah.
All of them?
No. Not all of them.
The ones that are nervous about surgery.
Yeah, probably.
So they know how to study.
I think it's a performance issue. Yeah. Like, I love surgery because I'm an instant gratification person. Like, see it, fix it. Woo!
A time to cut's a time to cure.
Yeah, you know, I like it. You know, the medicine side, maybe because a lot of internal med stuff is difficult for me to fully grasp. Like, I can get it. Sure, like I can get by, but I'm not like doing these full workups. I'm not like super intrigued by 3 weeks of diarrhea. The TPLO that comes in, I'm like, oh yeah, let's go do that. That's cool.
Orthopedics suck. Those are the only surgeries that I refuse to do.
Mm.
I would do FHOs,
right?
But I refuse to do any other orthopedic.
Chop and go.
Well, especially if it's a young puppy or a little kitten. Ugh.
Yeah.
But it was... man, as Dr. Hamill always told me, the Lord doesn't like a coward.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, go do it. I mean, he came back though from the time where there weren't that many specialists. Yeah. They were the specialty hospital. Yeah. But the thing, you got to learn also, because everyone talks about the cost of care and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn how to do these procedures and get comfortable so they don't have to have the euthanasia just talk. Mm. Right? Now, orthopedics aren't for everybody.
Sure.
Right? That's an art form. It's freaking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Back surgery, art form.
That sounds terrifying.
Right. Don't even need to touch it. A bleeding spleen, they can go specialty for $15,000 or you can do it for $5,000.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Come on, a splenectomy?
Get in there. Well, no, get in there and do it because the dog, just so you know.
Yeah.
If the mass is bleeding on the spleen shuts off as a safety mechanism, it won't really bleed anymore.
Right.
If the mass is on the liver and it ruptures, it's going to keep bleeding no matter what you do. Those are what we used to call the peak and shriek, right? You go in there because of the hemoabdomen, you're like, oh, the mass is on the spleen. You look at the liver, and that's what's bleeding.
Yeah.
I always recommend euthanasia on the table so they never wake up from it.
Yeah.
But... Then again, I mean, let's get back to the splenectomy.
Yeah.
You are that savior for that animal at that point. A great majority of Americans cannot afford $15,000.
Mm-hmm. Great majority of veterinarians couldn't afford it.
Right. We took our pig into the vet the other day. It was $2,500.
Holy shit. Yeah.
But again, I would do anything in the world for my animals. And everyone's relationship is different with their animals.
Sure.
So don't let fear get in your way of practicing. Mm-hmm. It's okay to worry. But there's a huge difference between worry and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear will keep you from becoming the best version of you. And I tell my kids that all the time. Life does not begin until you get outside your comfort zone. I quote Lionel Richie on that.
Mm-hmm.
Push yourself. You will be amazed at what you will accomplish. But I can promise you, if you don't push yourself, you're going to hate what you can't accomplish. So, you know, if you're like, wow, this splenectomy, I don't know what to do. Get out your notes. Have the technician reading the book as you're doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Hopefully your mentor is available. If mm-hmm. he's not, just, I'm telling you, it's, you're just going to have to do it. Like cystotomy, talking about most rewarding and unrewarding thing you can do at the same time. Even worse, surgery I hate more than freaking anything is the oral hematoma.
Why is that?
There's 95,000 ways to do it.
Mm.
And they all scar anyways. I was lucky. I went to a meeting. I learned how to do a method from the University of Purdue. And it worked pretty damn well. And I actually used to be able to do it under sedation and local.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Just block it.
Right. But a lot of people are like, oh, come in 3 times a week and we're going to inject it with Kenalog and we're going to do this and that. What, Van Aaron? What? Yes, there are clients out there that will do that.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll see you 3 times a week for the next 2 weeks. But you're going to have to give them a surgical option that, you know what? I can fix this tomorrow when we'll be done. Okay. You might have to do that.
Mm.
But then again, there's many different ways.
Right.
I remember one time I fixed an oral hematoma and I cut into the ear and it wasn't blood. It was freaking pus.
Oh.
The dog got in a dog fight.
Gnarly.
So abscessed. I'm like, okay. I'm like, what do I do here?
Changing protocol.
Right. I called Dr. Gassel on the phone. He's like, yeah, you just fix it.
Hmm.
The ear sloughed off. The whole ear.
Oh.
But, and I was like, and I, gut punch, right?
Yeah.
Bad outcome. What the fuck? It would have sloughed off anyway.
Yeah. You just opened it up.
I just drained the pus.
Would probably was beneficial, honestly.
Well, the dog was so freaking painful.
Yeah, it's probably hurting. That's I mean,
hematomas hurt. Yeah. Could you imagine?
Pressure plus the infection?
Pus? Oh, yeah. My God.
That's got to be. That probably had a heartbeat.
Oh, poor it was dog. The worst. It was the worst. You know, you never let the sun set on a pyometra.
Mm-hmm.
You've never done a pyometra? Guess what? It's an easy spay. You can make your incision this big. You can gently pull out the uterus and you see all the blood vessels because they're all engorged. Mm-hmm. It's an easy thing to do. And then you make sure when you cut your uterine stump, you oversew it.
Mm-hmm.
You can take this part of the uterus and suture it to that so you seal it.
Mm-hmm.
And then flush the living hell out of the abdomen with saline. Use 10 bags of saline if you want to. I don't care.
Right.
The solution of pollution is dilution.
Yeah.
That's a rewarding surgery because mm-hmm. that dog's going to feel like $1 million. There are some pyos, though. I gave an owner a quote. They went down the street to a different clinic because it was cheaper. The reason it was cheaper, why is it usually cheaper? They cut corners.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what they didn't do? They didn't pull blood.
Mm.
The dog died of acute renal failure 3 days later, which is the problem with pyos, because
mm-hmm.
you're throwing this toxic insult to the kidneys. Yep. And then they came back at me and they were like, they were mad at me for the outcome. I'm like, I would have done blood work. It was on your treatment plan.
Right.
I would have said, hey, these kidneys are bad. We're going to have to hospitalize your dog for about 2-3 days on IV antibiotics because there's probably bacteria
and
all over the kidneys. They did sub-Q fluids. They sent the dog home the same day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do the best you can. I understand that. But there's some things that you also need to know.
Be aware of, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those are all, lessons learned.
It's good advice. And those are the lessons I hopefully don't have to learn the hard way. Like things like that happen. Obviously, things are going to happen. But yeah, I just go back to like the surgery thing. And why so many people are afraid of it. I mean, you say it yourself in your conversations, like referring away your retirement. Like, why are they referring away a cystotomy?
Well, I'm not even worried about the money.
No.
Money aside.
I'm saying that's a benefit also. Right. You know, that's not the component. That's not the core component. But, like, you have the ability to help the patient or help the pet and the owner. Like, the cost, if you go to a referral center, like you're saving them money, right? You're charging way less, especially if they go to a corporate-owned hospital that are going to charge way more to do the same thing. And it's not like that's super, super intricate to do a cystotomy or like unblock a Tomcat. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I feel like there's so many doctors even now,
right,
that don't do a lot of surgery.
Right. So, I mean, and this is the challenge I have for you. Instead of saying cystotomy, because we both have listeners that aren't veterinarians. Mm-hmm. So the way you explain it is your animal, unfortunately, has stones in the bladder.
Mm-hmm.
There, we could try to dissolve them.
Right.
But chances are we can get it out quicker with stones. Mm-hmm. And chances are those stones will return.
Yeah.
I don't care what diet you use.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how it is. But, you know, I think going forward, you know, I think this profession will have a chance if we continue these types of conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to like gauge their interest and like try to understand. I would love to hear from vets that listen to this or even vet staff, because they have a lot of insight too, because maybe the vet doesn't want to reach out, but they're telling all of the things I would love them to say to us, to their staff, why they don't want to do things or why they do things the way that they do it. So I would love them to reach out to at least Veterinary Vibes. I mean, I'm sure you would love to hear from them too.
I'd love to have them on the, yeah, I would love to have them on the platform.
Yeah. I would love that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of veterinarians do need to put their voice out there and do put their concerns out there, mm-hmm. but more importantly to help you guys.
Yeah.
You early career professionals, I really think they need to tell you their lessons they learned. I always make sure I close out every podcast I have. I always say, craziest case you remember. And it's amazing where it goes. Mm. So I challenge all your listeners
mm-hmm.
to say, and my listeners as well, what's the craziest vet school story you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And try to think about that.
Yeah.
See if it doesn't give you a smile.
Yeah.
Think if it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Make you laugh, make you reflect, make you think. Because I could say, oh, tell me about your worst day you had at work. Who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. Everyone has bad days.
Yeah.
Veterinarians aren't the only ones.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you got to change your mindset of thinking. You mm-hmm. got to try to make lemons out of lemonade.
Yeah.
Or lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah. I got you. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. Well, you know, sauce, my sponsor's starting to kick up with me. Mm-hmm. But I think you and I having more of these conversations going forward,
mm-hmm.
I think will be phenomenal, because you and I could come together and, I mean, it's perfect. We have, mm-hmm. what, 25 years between us, basically,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
as far as profession.
Okay. Us making sure.
God, I'm surprised you haven't said anything about my hair too. So
yeah,
but or lack of,
it's growing.
Yeah,
it's because you went to Greece.
I did. Oh man, that's a whole.
I gotta hear about that. Yeah,
that's a whole nother talk. But you know, I think if the listeners at least would reach out to us with whatever questions they have,
please. Yeah, we need it. We need you guys to reach out to us. You know, the engagement online is great. But I love having those one-on-ones with people that send me DMs, they send little messages, they text, they call, you know, all my information is out there, especially for the vet student space. Like if you just even need someone to talk to, if you're struggling with anything, like reach out to me. And if I can't give you the answer, I have, for you, I'll say a Rolodex of people that, can give you better advice than I could ever give. So, again, reach out.
I was waiting for you to go with the Dewey Decimal System.
I didn't go that far.
But, and also, you know, for the listeners too, you have to realize there are quite a great majority of veterinarians that are like me
mm-hmm.
that really do care about it. And all you got to do is ask.
Yep.
You just got to ask. We're not mind readers. As I've discussed, a lot of veterinarians don't have those soft skills, so they really can't read the situation. So, if you're concerned, if you're upset, if you have questions, you just need to open your mouth.
Yep.
So, you know, if you want to get a hold of me, Dr. DRG at VetMedIT, my websites are still coming up because I'm going to get all those podcasts out there.
Yeah, I'm excited.
You can send me on Instagram, DM me on Instagram or on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to collaborate, I hope, a lot more.
Oh, yeah, I'm down.
because we have a chance to do something. But mm-hmm. like I said, if we don't hear from you, we don't know where to go. And we're mm-hmm. going with his concerns and my concerns mm-hmm. right now. But guess what? That's only two of us.
Yeah.
There's
bigger voices.
What? How many veterinarians are on VIN? I mean, that put that number up there, 106,000?
Yeah, probably over 100,000, I'd say.
So there's quite a few of you around the world that will hopefully benefit from us talking shit to each other.
Yeah.
And hopefully, again, reach out, open up.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Let us know your ideas.
Right.
I'm always down to hear ideas, what you guys want to hear, and who you want to have on.
Because eventually I would love to take phone calls.
That would be that live episodes would be sweet.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where we're going. We're slowly working on it. We're getting there. We're trying to get everything going well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's really busy with school. So sometimes it's just me by myself. Mm-hmm. And you can watch, follow him on TikTok. I'm sure he does something stupid at least once a day because it's always showing up. It's always showing up.
That's true.
So if you need a laugh, follow him. If you need someone who's going to bring you to reality and tell you the truth and try to help you work through things, you call me. But I still have fun.
Jackass.
I still have a good time.
You want someone serious, call me over here. He's so serious.
You want someone who's really been there and done it? This guy.
If you want somebody that's ignorant, still has his hair, follow that guy.
Exactly. The one with the toddler, the one with this already had two through college. Take your pick. So anyways, thanks you so much for listening. Irreplaceable Truths, Dr. G.
Veterinary Vibes, Garth Robillard. Hit us up.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.